Armour breaks, buildings burn, rubble is pulverized into dust. Only humans can survive. These are not my words, and it is apposite that the name of he who wrote them is now ash. It is the strength of the human frame to emerge from any hell, beaten but stronger. Flesh, bone, the genic inheritance we bear, that is all that will outlive our works in the end. The Remembrances of Arcaduana, Volume 267, The Fall of the Lords of Gardenal. Chapter 11. News of the attempt against the Primarch's life travelled quickly through the Fist of Iron and the combined fleet, but details were the first to suffer before the outrage that ensued. Morn was alive. Morn was dead. Morn was in medical stasis awaiting internment in one of the Averni clan's Contemptor dreadnoughts. Venerati Urien did still live. That much was known. His former captain, Gar, of Orda Quarii, had, to the relief of all, bellowed the news into the hall. Santar, if the slow bleed of rumour and hearsay could be believed, clung to life like a Norse swordsman to his blade. It was said he had been the closest to the explosion. Words like miracle and machine-touched were conjuncted to rumours of his survival, though none could agree on where he now was or the gravity of his injuries. Taking all accounts at face value, left the first captain with little more than one arm, a head, and a blinding determination not to be outlived by Lord Commander Duquesne. Of the honour guard that had departed the embarkation deck for Ferris Manus's chambers, some said three were dead, others said that number was closer to 10, but none could agree on whether that included Morn, Urien, or Santar. As for the Primarch himself, even rumour and hearsay only went so far. Thus, the mood amongst his children in the practice hall was black. The Iron Hands did not express themselves as eloquently or as often as the Emperor's children, but they did feel. They needed an outlet, and Arcaduana was happy to provide. He allowed the Averni clan veteran's flail to drone past his head.
There was no warrior more tenacious than Morn.
The veteran's name was Yoran. Arcaduana smashed his elbow into the warrior's cheek, Timur's curved edge rising counter to turn an axe blow from his body.
He survived the Battle of Lox.
The axe-warrior Feldorn threw a punch with his offhand that Arcaduana deflected from the vambrace of his training leathers.
For what? To be slain by a subdermal explosive in a corridor of his own ship?
A brief tangling of limbs saw Feldorn stumbling away. A quick follow-up and Arcaduana could have finished him, but instead he skipped back as the clawed gauntlet of the third Iron Hands legionary hacked millimetres from his face. It was a lighter, unpowered version of the lightning claw, designed for practice use, but plenty lethal enough when employed with more anger than skill. Arcaduana's feet fluttered beneath him as Aesop's partner claw slashed for him, left to right. Athenia nudged it on its way, his Chana Braal sabres dancing apart, whirling together, and spinning off with new partners as they blocked a furious tirade of blows. Nothing came out of Aesop's mouth but grunts and spittle. It was not that the veteran was unskilled, far from it. He was one of the First Order's best, but he was unreasoningly angry. Cutting outwards from the middle with both blades, Arcaduana batted aside the Iron Hand's claws and opened up his front. A backward somersault carried him under Yoran's flail and staggered Aesok with an uppercut delivered from the toe of his bare foot. The veteran grimaced, clicking his jaws side to side.
Throw that in power armour!
Superior armour, superior firepower, superior numbers. Sometimes I wonder how you Iron Hands would cope with the odds stacked against you.
Morn never feared the odds.
Claw, axe and flail flashed together. Arcaduana could not tell now which one of them spoke.
He walked into the fire at Lox and was one of the few to walk out.
Arcaduana wove, skipped, danced through blades on pointed toes, landing a blow where one presented, but otherwise content to let his adversaries work.
He commanded the First Order since. They say it was to be him or Santar to be clan captain. But Santar was already Ferris's equerry, and Morn was Terran.
He eased himself from the melee, isolating Isok and Yoran with a twirl of his blades, inviting Feldorn to power after him, which the axe warrior duly did, hacking at him with a roar, axe clamped in both hands. With a deft stab under the stroke, Arkadiwana snared the axe blade with Athenia's crossguard, pivoted the blade to pop the axe from Feldorn's grip, then cracked him over the back of the head with the jewel pommel. The legionary stumbled past and into the path of Yoran's flail. He took the hit with a sigh, almost grateful for the release, and slumped to the floor of the cage with a smile on his face. He dipped his guard slightly as the others closed. His breath was coming with a pleasing rapidity, his skin warm and lightly lathered with sweat. He jerked his head, flicking his warrior braid from his face.
It was not Morn's fault what happened, nor Urien's nor Santar's. It was not your fault for not being there. No, it was the Primarch's fault.
With evident difficulty, Ulan Sisyrus climbed up to the cage. A handful of iron hands, sullenly polishing sparring blades, watched him from the benches. The ultramarine moved with a hunch that spared his right side, thick tubular bandages emerging from the folds of his toga. His noble features were drained and pale, as if standing was an ordeal for the ages. But he carried his ornate ultramarian sword and a short spear from the training racks in his hands.
In his haste to outshine my father, he acted recklessly. Ferus Manus brought this upon himself, and upon us all.
You cannot blame your losses on him,
one of the Iron Hands growled. Yoran.
Not all of them. Perhaps not even most of them. And I will have to live with my shame. Will he? I do not know. That is what we would call a theoretical. The practical is that men are dead who would otherwise have lived if he had waited.
He has his reasons, said Arkadiwana,
to prove himself superior to his brothers, or at least in his own mind their equal. But even if Arkadiwana could break the Primarch's confidence, he doubted the Ultramarine would be impressed by such a justification.
He's a Primarch, and above our judgment.
The Iron Hands rumbled agreement. They would curse their Primarch as often as laud him, but that was their right. They were his sons.
That is not how I was taught.
Sisyrus angled his spear towards the two Iron Hands, his sword to Arkadiwana. His injuries were severe, but he was still a chapter master of the 13th Legion.
Will your grief turn its face from mine? You are not the only ones to have lost brothers.
The Iron Hands drew back, by unspoken consent making room for the ultramarine to enter. He dipped his head.
My thanks.
Then lunged with his spear, the four warriors dissolving together like oxygen into blood in a blistering catharsis of melee. Sisyrus fought Yoran, Isok fought Sisyrus, Arkadiwana fought everyone, and would have bested them all had he but tried a little. He might not have been a great painter, or an orator or scholar, or victualler or medicae, but put a sword in his hand, and something transformative took hold. Closer to Fulgrim, he sometimes thought. Further from the Emperor, he would invariably then feel. Later, after the weapons were sheathed, and his hands were bloody. Isok backpedaled furiously, tripping over Feldorn's prone body to crash into the bars. The Iron Hand fed his arm through the bars to take a grip on them. He was bruised, but energized for it. He nodded his thanks. Arkadiwana returned the gesture, and again to those still conscious. But as he extended a hand to help Sisyrus hold his balance, he froze. The hall was silent. It was testament to Sisyrus and the Iron Hand's cumulative abilities that they had preoccupied him sufficiently to miss the cessation of combat in the lower cages. The combatants stood quiet. Those content to grieve alone without the catalyst of arms were deathly still. 100 pairs of eyes all slaved to one and focused on Arkadiwana. The mood, when he had begun, had been black. Now it was something else. In any other company, he might have called it fearful. Ferus Manus watched him from the other side of the bars. Arkadiwana could almost feel the chamber being bent around him, the hopes, fears, and lives of so many drawn by his raw, neutronic charisma towards brief iridescence and death. He dropped to his knee and bowed.
My Lord Primarch, I am overjoyed.
Santar and Duquesne. Then Urien. Then Santar again.
Fulgrim had a temper, and had been known to lose it, but Ferris Manus's wrath was tectonic.
Now half a squad of my veterans. Did my brother send you purely to humiliate me?
My lord, he...
Does Fulgrim appreciate your excuses?
No, lord.
It is not enough for you that the guard and I'll frustrate and deny me at every turn. Do I need Captain Arcaduana to take every opportunity to demonstrate the frailty of my legion as well?
Fulgrim loves you as he loves no other. He praises you as no other. Not Horus, not Sanguinius. You.
Arcaduana thumped the stiff leather of his chest piece, emboldened to go further by his own fluttering of anger.
And I am his firstborn son.
You swore an oath to support me on your knees in my own chamber.
He bellowed the last, and Arcaduana was almost felled before the strident force of the Primarch's words. Ferris's gaze shifted to encompass the iron hands sprawled over the floor of the cage.
Is this what your oath is worth to me?
Arcaduana bowed his head. It was not only Ferris's sons who had felt the cut of their own blade over the compliance of Gardenal. The Primarch was angry. He needed someone to blame. Arcaduana was happy to provide.
You are as much a father to me as Fulgrim. Tell me what it is you wish from me, and if it is mine to give, I will give it.
Ferris shook his head as though disappointed. In a rustle of mail, he raised one fulminating metal fist to point towards the heavy-barred dome of the hall's largest fighting cage. It was huge, held erect by four great columns of reinforced ferrocrete. Arcaduana had assumed it was for hosting bouts between dreadnoughts. A shiver of fear ran through him, closely shadowed by and barely distinguishable from another of excitement. Now he saw what it was really for.
I want to see just how good you are.
Luke Honsum.
Melian Jaskulich read the name aloud from her flipboard as she struck it through. She felt for a pulse in the neck, then the wrist. Trooper Honsum's burnt skin was still warm and a little clammy. It reminded her of a damp sponge that had been left to go cold. With a shiver, she made a note. K.I.A. on the repatriation form. The army took care of its own. Tull called it the Covenant Militarum, some spark of enlightenment that had endured through the wars of ancient Europa. As much as the legions might privately, and some not so privately, wish to push their mortal auxilia until they gave, it was, fortunately, none of their business. The Covenant Militarum gave a regiment's commanding officer ultimate responsibility for the individuals in his regiment. So while superhuman heroes battled for the right to rule the galaxy, the army took care of its own. But it wouldn't be the first time that a traumatized soldier had sought demob status amongst the dead. She nodded to the corpsman, who then wheeled the trolley past, clattering up the ramp to the Arvus lighter. It wore the drab ochre and grey camo of the 5th Galilean Mixed Infantry. Even the whine of its engines was sombre. She sighed and flipped to the next page. No one waited in line with more patience than the dead. Dozens of them surrounded the waiting Arvus on trolleys, pushed by corpsmen in an assortment of unwashed regimental fatigues. If there was a uniform, then it was the sombre expression they wore. A mixture of sorrow and boredom. Melin shook her head. Tull had a way with the dead, a black camaraderie. He would tell them jokes, sit up late in the mortuary telling stories, as if every one were an old friend, that they might wake as if from a coma if only they had a familiar voice to grab hold of. She smiled sadly. Tull wasn't nearly as thick-skinned as he made out. She wished he was here now for this, or any of the Medicaid Corps from the 413th, but she was the only senior left that hadn't been deployed to the planet. She supposed she should be grateful, and by terror was she grateful, but she very much preferred her patients alive.
Samuel Gorse.
She read from the next form as the corpsman clattered back down the ramp with an empty trolley, as if they had just colluded in a magic trick.
Eric Steele.
In, out, in, out.
Carl Yarrow.
More names, like birth and death, sped up. Her stylus scratched on paper.
Ibran Grape.
She lowered her flipboard and smiled. The colonel beamed up at her with the disarming honesty of a man who had come to terms with the fact that his days were numbered, in double figures, if he was extraordinarily lucky.
This is it, then, he said.
Ibran sat up on his trolley, dressed in his formals by one of the merciful sisters, but with a foil blanket still draped over his legs. The bandages had been unwound from his face. His skin looked as though it were just badly sunburned, a few pioneer melanomas freckling his cheeks. A braided dress cap effectively concealed his baldness, but there was no obscuring the loss of his eyebrows and lashes.
This is it, she replied.
Last chance.
Her eyebrows arched theatrically.
Last chance to run off with me. Ganymede is quite beautiful for a hive world. It's all right anyway, I've seen worse.
He gave a broad smile, his gums dark and shrunken.
And the pension for a colonel's widow isn't unrespectable.
It gets a bit less respectable split two ways with your wife, though, doesn't it?
She gave him a stern look.
Assuming it is only two ways?
Ibrahim's smile relaxed into something settled.
My wife. It'll be good to see her again. I wonder if they're still living in the same hab by the Nanshi Katina.
I'm sure they are.
The regiment promised they'd cover it.
I'm sure they did.
Melian didn't mention that Ibran had only the slimmest of chances of returning to the Terran system outside of a stasis draw alongside Luke, Samuel, Eric, Carl, and the others. He knew. Forcing a bright smile, she went back to her flipboard. The invalid form was a different colour to the previous. Her stylus touched the dotted line requiring her signature, imagining all of a sudden an ochre and grey world she had never seen. A medike who wouldn't know Ibran Greep from any other soldier being presented with a similar but differently coloured form. K-I-A. The nib bled ink.
There.
She blinked quickly and smiled up at Ibran.
It's official.
The colonel reached out with red and shaking fingers to take her hand, for a kiss, presumably. Such a chivalrous ass. The corpsman slouched over the trolley's push handle, blew out and rolled his eyes. She extended her hand as the doors to the deck crashed in. The good-natured badinage between the invalided soldiers that had been following in behind their dead ceased. Everyone shifted in their trolleys to look back. Melian frowned towards the doors and shrank in sudden, inexplicable dread. Intep Amar of the Thousand Suns was huge in full armour, as red as freshly spilled blood and just as frightening. His unhelmed face was skeletal, cherry red, his eyes huge, an angel of death. The white headdress that hung from his iron hood twisted and fluttered as he strode towards Melian and the Arvus. Legion serfs, with the apothecarian helix sewn into their liveries, hurried after their master, carting heavy equipment cases.
"What's this?"
She surprised herself with her own voice and flinched. Ignoring the question, the librarian pointed to the shuttle.
"I want the bodies removed from that shuttle."
One of the serfs, a supercilious medike wearing a long red coat, white gloves and unhygienic gold piping, handed her a piece of paper.
"All prior repatriation and transfer orders have been rescinded."
"What?"
said Ibran, pushing himself up in his trolley.
"Orders of the expedition commander."
"Cicerus would never..."
"You have your orders."
Melian read the orders to the bottom as Legion serfs charged past and up the ramp to the Arvus, unloading their equipment and piling their trolleys with the dead. Tull would have fought. He would have kicked, screamed, made a fuss, made a scene. Tull wasn't here.
"The rest of you..."
Amar waved vaguely over the Galileans, as if saving his strength.
"Into the shuttle."
Ibran's face screwed up in pained incomprehension.
"But you said the transfers were rescinded."
Melian carefully folded the orders, giving her hands something to do other than shake. She tucked the paper into the breast pocket of her coat and looked up at Amar. The librarian's eyes were bleeding. His skin was red, the shape of his skull visible behind the face. She wondered if this was what Magnus looked like, and felt sick at the thought. A little personal adversity, a little taste of actual mortality, and now his golden ideals were smoke. Tal would have been fascinated.
"You believed in the crusade," she whispered. "What happened to you?"
The same apothecarian serf that had handed her the orders brandished a data slate. He handed it to Millian. The librarian tapped the plastic frame, his gauntleted finger as wide as her wrist.
"Sign the orders."
Tull would have fought. She hung her head. She didn't want Ibran to see her face. And signed. From Ferris's cage, Arkaduana could see across the practice hall from end to end. Several hundred iron hands had congregated, silent, like an ocean in darkness. It was there, but one powerful sense of it was absent.
"You will need your armor," said Ferris.
Arkaduana almost found himself chuckling.
"I will have it sent for."
Ulan Sisyrus stood on the bottom step. The point of his spear was wedged into the right angle of the steps, and he leaned into it. He called for Arkaduana's serfs. There was a minor commotion at the periphery of the crowd, but it was impossible to focus on. Ferris Manus loomed over him. The Primarch was bigger by far even than Gabriel Santar had been in Cataphracti Plate when they had duelled on Vesta. His armour had suffered for its confrontation with the Gardenal. A gouge had been torn from the breastplate, an unsympathetic infill where the fusion of molten ceramite and liquid sealant had formed a ceramic crust of scar tissue. The gauntlet emblem on his heavy dog-toothed shoulder guard had been scratched to tracks of white nothing by particle fire. The cloak of mail that hung from his broad shoulders was torn, bent, and creased by twisted links, and whispered of its anger with a crinkling of metal. His pale, scarred face was framed by the high back of his riveted gorget, lit coldly by the reflection of its silver trim. Newer injuries furrowed into a scowl as he looked down. Arkaduana was faintly disappointed that Ferris stood before him with bare fists rather than Forgebreaker. To pit his swords against the hammer that his father had made would have been an honour. He chided himself. What was he thinking? He was about to face a Primarch.
"I have never been able to find a challenge amongst my own sons."
Ferris remained as still as a mountain as the Third Legion serfs clattered into the cage, pushing an arming dummy encased in Arkaduana's magnificent battleplate. Piece by piece, they began unbuckling his training leathers and drilling him into his war harness, ignored by the Primarch as he spoke.
"Even the Legion's ancients can only match me so far. I built this cage myself for my brothers."
Arkaduana held out his arms while his serfs machined on plates and engaged the seals.
"Then these bars could tell some stories."
"Fewer than you might think. My brothers are surprisingly reluctant."
Arkaduana's eyebrow arched. The armourers moved to his legs.
"Oh?"
"Fulgrim would joke that he would die with shame were his sons to see him defeated."
Ferris snorted.
"Vulcan said that he did not want to hurt me."
And again, looking to his clenching fist.
"Me. I told him that I would make him a finer weapon than that I gifted to Fulgrim if he would try."
"And?"
"And these bars have few stories to tell."
"But not none."
Ferris's eyes glinted like daggers. His smile did not blunt their edge.
"I am honoured, Lord."
The armourers pulled and prodded at Arkaduana's seals. Satisfied with their work, the ranking serf approached with his helmet. Arkaduana waved him away. He was about to fight a Primarch, and he intended to savour it.
"I do you no honour."
"I know."
"Your birth father fought the Emperor."
"He did."
"My brother speaks highly of you."
"I know."
"He says you have no equal."
Arkaduana shrugged, but felt a tingle of pride. Not so much in the fact as that it had been spoken by a Primarch.
"The Emperor's children boast many fine swordsmen. Ravash Kario has the potential to be great, and there is a brilliant young legionary in second company called Lucius who may yet reach my standard.
if he can tear his face from the mirror.
But they are not you.
They are not me.
I know how that feels.
Arcaduana pivoted around the waist, made some practice punches, testing the armorer's work. The power servos whined as he drew Timur and Athenia. The serfs had rebelted his scabbards over his power armor, and the two Shanabral sabers emerged from their silks with the most expectant of sighs. An unmodified mortal at the farthest part of the hall would have felt it. Ferris's eyes flickered with self-hatred.
Begin!
The anarchy of a war zone had nothing compared to a launch bay in the grip of pre-flight. Aircraft howled, slurped promethium from hoses that lay in tangles along the deck, chewed on ammo belts as they were fed into the huge riveted hoppers of autocannon and heavy bolters. Aircraft never looked more imposing than they did up close on the ground. 10th Legion serfs crisscrossed, skipping over the knotted tangle of rubber fuel lines and ducking under protruding wings. Servitors pushed trolleys laden with missiles. Helmeted logisticians with spatial sorting matrices appended to their flesh brains waved fluorescent paddles. Magnetic cranes guided by machine intelligence and algorithmic wafer descended from the hex grid of overhead rails, maneuvering aircraft into mag slings in prepared formation. It was coldly efficient. Perfect. The open launch bay doors shimmered with the blue of a coherence field under assault by atmospheric pressure. The void beyond was shifted to the blue end of the spectrum, the stars hidden by the light of it, analogous to a daylit sky on a virginal world. But the bald grey hemisphere of Gardenal was too huge to be filtered by a little light. It was not the world's fault that it was ugly, but the sight of it offended Orten Vertinus just the same. He pitied its people, forced to dwell on such a drab orb. Even Chemos, an exhausted desert of hollowed mountains and drained seas, had possessed bright spots, oases where beauty lingered. But not this place, this homogeneous morass of rockcrete and plasteel and human subordination.
"Where are you taking us?"
said Palaeolinus. Edoran, Tyro, and Seca crowded in behind him, where they would not find themselves in the path of a draft servitor. They were all dressed in their flight armor, looking around in horrified fascination at the almost sorcerous autonomy of the lifting cranes and the hideously but effectively altered crew serfs. Palaeolinus raised his voice as a machine-driven cart carrying a repair detail growled past.
"We need to prepare for launch.
It's a surprise.
We lost a pilot. I will not be shown up a second time."
"We won't." Vertinus put his hands on the wing commander's shoulders and turned him towards a squadron of 5 broad-nosed, thick-bodied, heavy fighters sitting on their landing gears. Their hull armor was black, trimmed with silver and with white streaks from the harsh overhead lighting, war paint that shifted depending on position and mood. The underslung missile pods were so heavy they seemed to drag the wings into a downward slant, and the belly of the craft to the deck. The tail fins spiked upwards from the rear end of the craft, a brutalist, functional sheet of black metal. He sighed, hands on hips as he admired the lead craft. She was a pugilist. Her scars only enhanced her fierceness. Her broken bones only made her tougher. Good looks were for onlookers. What could be more beautiful in battle than taking all your enemy could throw, seeing that in his eyes, in the split second before he was annihilated by your guns? What indeed? Then with the losers let it sympathize, for nothing can seem foul to those that win, as the Shakespeare had said.
"Primaris lightnings," Palaeolinus breathed.
"They were damaged prior to Vesta. Their pilots were assigned other roles for the war games, and so were left behind with the bulk of the 52nd. Edoran frowned at the inelegant aircraft, unconvinced.
"They are greatly favoured by the Mechanicum," said Tyro.
"So are Red Robes," Edoran snapped back.
"They are perfect,"
Palaeolinus announced. Vertinus dipped his head. The Gardenal no longer has an aeronautica to speak of. There is no need for an interceptor squadron, and...
"Hush, brother."
Palaeolinus emphasized the command with a wave of his hand.
"Do not oil your words with practicalities like an iron hand," would his war gear.
We will fly them for Moses, and carry our wing brother with us in spirit by riding in the machines he loved best.
Vertinus smiled, but said nothing. Their brothers nodded in understanding. Palaeolinus laid a hand on the nose of the lead aircraft.
Purple Sun, we will honor him in our way, by doing our utmost to surpass his every achievement.
The legionaries embraced, a circle of five, a sixth in spirit. When they separated, they were five again, hurrying for their fighters.
Ferus Manus attacked before the command to begin had left his mouth. Given his Goliath physique, his speed was staggering. A lesser duelist than Arcaduana would have been pulverized on the spot, and even he was forced into an admiring gasp as the smouldering metal fist thundered past his eyes. The Primarch was holding nothing back, and with a roar he came again. A thrilling combination of terror and elation filled Arcaduana as he jinked between blows, under them, away, fed by a lightness of heart he had not felt with a sword in his hand since the first time he had stood before old Corinth. Before unification had been won, Ferus bellowed and swung with his left. Arcaduana bent under it and allowed it to clang into the bars. He rolled back, always back. He did not bother using his swords to parry. It would have been like blocking a bane blade. He ducked and weaved, danced and slid, swords a blur of feint and misdirection. His movements were intuitive, faster than gen-hanced thought, but compared to the gap between audacious youngster and grizzled thunder warrior, that between legionary and primarch was a yawning one. He grinned. He was going to have to try. With sheer bludgeoning power, Ferus forced him up against the bars. His swords bit at the vulnerable joints in the Primarch's armor. Ferus ignored them. Stings from a persistent insect. He feinted with Timur, drawing the Primarch's eyes, then used the length of Athenia to stab at the Primarch's groin. The master-crafted saber pierced the heavy mail only to become wedged between a pair of crushed rings. Ferus gave a snarl and smacked the blade with his wrist. The ancient Grecan blade shattered, rune-inscribed metal shards daggering the floor at Arcaduana's feet. The force of the blow splintered his gauntlet, sent hairline fractures running up Arcaduana's vambrace, and almost pulled his shoulder from its socket. He cried out in glee.
"Why do you laugh?"
Ferus drew back. Even unarmed, he had reach. Arcaduana could only shrug, enfolding Timur in a two-handed grip.
"Because?"
Spitting with anger, Ferus drove his fist at Arcaduana's chest. Too big to avoid, too fast. He cried out in shock as his breastplate caved in, splitting the palatine aquila into frayed halves, gold leaf fluttering around the hot liquescence of Ferus's arm. Knuckles ground in. His ribplate cracked, then shattered. Before he had even registered the pain, he was flying, crashing into the bars with force enough to break more bones. The bars themselves were made of firmer stuff, built by Ferus's own hand to contain the might of a Primarch. They did not bend. Vibrating with a metallic basso profundo, they flung him back into the ring, sprawled on his chest and crying out for the pain of his fractured ribs. A great weight pushed into his shoulder, elicited a murmur of pain, then closed over it to haul him up by the golden fretwork. Ferris's eyes burned into his, consumed them in his expression incandescent as he drew back his arm to deliver a finishing blow.
"I, too, once fought the Emperor. He is a greater being than you could imagine. How did your mortal father manage it?"
Arcaduana could barely see the fist before him. His eye was swollen, his face puffed and bloody.
"He wished to give him every opportunity to yield."
He gave a laugh, coughing it up in gurgles. Ferus frowned.
"Tell me why you laugh."
"Do you not see?"
Ferus's grip tightened, a splintering of ceramite. Arcaduana chuckled, winced, then chuckled again.
"This is what we were born to do. Both of us, to fight, and eventually one day, lose. It feels good."
Some of the aggression left Ferris's eyes.
"In one thing, at least, I was right. Our legions have much to learn from one another."
He lowered Arcaduana to the ground, where the captain proceeded to fold bonelessly over his knees.
"What has now passed was your war,
What now commences shall be mine. There will be no feast of celebration, no proclamation of victory. I do not claim worlds. I conquer them. My victories are their own proclamation. I will present my brother Gilliman with ash around a barren star. That shall be my proclamation, and the Gardenal shall forevermore be remembered only for the manner in which they fell.
His gaze passed over his warriors, silent before his scorn, for what they had just witnessed was not a contest. It was a lesson.
I have sought to lead as Fulgrim, or Gilliman, would have led. But that is not my way. It is not the Medusan way. The Gardenal have had ample opportunity to yield.
Grumbles of agreement swept the hall. Arcduana swayed on the spot, blinking up at the Primarch, and it fell to Sisyrus to speak out.
The Emperor desired these worlds intact.
The Gardenal rule over 11 worlds. I will give my father 10.
The 413th expedition will not act in defiance of the Emperor.
You are derelict, Chapter Master.
Sisyrus straightened against his wedged spear.
I serve the Emperor of Terra, the ideals of his great crusade, my father and his brothers, and in that sequence. I will not defy the first of my masters by ordering the destruction of Gardenal Prime.
For a long time, Ferris glared down at the ultramarine. Then a smile found its way across his face.
Perhaps if you were with the 413th where you belong, then you would have known. You are no longer in command of the expedition fleet.
You do not have that authority.
Gilliman can restore your command once he arrives. I will be done with you by then. Until that happens, your orders come from Ironfather Moore. He knows what I expect of my warriors.
Sisyrus bowed his head, too weary to defend himself any longer.
Your ultramarines will have the honor of the first assault.
Sisyrus gave his head a bitter shake. He held up his wounded arm. The sleeve of his toga slid back over crisp white bandages all the way to the shoulder. Ferris snorted. He looked expectantly over his sons, and then finally to Arcduana, slouched at his feet, like an eel dumped from a net. As if the answer were so blindingly apparent that it was an insult to a Primarch to have to voice it.
Fix it, Ultramarine.